Hello, everyone. Welcome to 99% Effective. We have a great episode because we are in October and it's National Disability Employment Awareness Month. So we are going to be talking about that. But since it is October, we have to talk about fall and Halloween. You know, it's a must. So George, my kids are all adults now. I don't even want to know how they're dressing for Halloween, to be honest with you. But you have younger children, correct?
I do. Yeah, my daughter is 8, so she's very much into the Halloween season. She usually starts planning in August. That way you can account for the 4 to 5 changes and what the final costume will be. So I think this year we're somewhere in the fairy world, but TBD on the final outcome of this costume.
Oh, well, I'll be looking forward to finding out what she decided on. Yes. I love when my kids are about that age and we, order or go get whatever it was. And they had to wear it for like, I was like, it's not Halloween yet, but they had to wear it like around the house. And so that was always fun. I do love the fall, and we had that one stretch of rain for a few days. But the weekends have been amazing. And I just love going out. And I do have a grandniece now, a great niece, who is just 10 months old. So I did the whole go get a pumpkin with them. And so I do love this time of year. I hate scary movies. So I don't do that. But when my kids were younger, I loved Halloween Town. We're big. I think they were Nickelodeon, Halloween Town.
Yeah,
that
sounds familiar.
Hocus Pocus. Gotta love Hocus Pocus. And the second one just came out, and I watched it all by myself. I was a little sad. I was in my back room, my fireplace going, and I was like, oh, okay, I kind of miss my kids right now. So I had my dogs. Don't like scary movies, but I do like the kind of campy Halloween-type fall movies.
Yeah. Yeah, we just started Hocus Pocus 1 and 2 yesterday in my house. And, you know, this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, but I watched the original Halloween the other day. And I must say, you know, there's a lot of plot holes in it. Wasn't the biggest fan. Again, very controversial opinion. It's not for me. I'm also not a scary movie kind of person.
Yeah.
But I did feel like I needed to commit considering the entire series is about to end. So I figured I'd watch the first one and decide if I'm going to watch any more. So the jury's still out on that one.
I'm not even happy right now with the trailers of all the scary movies that are out. I'm like, really? Like, the trailers are too scary for me. It's just not my thing. I like the campy fun. I think my kids do like the scary movies. My husband doesn't, so that's a good thing. So we don't have to, I don't even have to worry about seeing any of that on the TV. But we do like this time of year, not looking forward to what's coming after, because then we're falling into winter. So,
but I'm there with you.
Yeah. But I am looking forward to finding out what your daughter decides to be. So it's always fun. But let's get right into this episode because we have a lot to cover.
Awesome. Let's jump in. I am pleased to join Jen Costin, who is the Intakes and Special Projects Coordinator here at SARA, for a very special episode that we have this month, where we're going to really be talking about employment awareness when it comes to the disability community. So welcome, Jen.
Thank you so much. It is wonderful to be here, and I'm looking forward to discussing employment and this podcast episode.
Awesome. So, you know, as I said, you know, with October, it's actually National Disability Employment Awareness Month. And this is something where we recognize and celebrate the contributions of workers with disabilities, kind of past and present, kind of talking about their hardships getting into employment, but also really focusing on how we can showcase our support, certainly, which is something we do here at SARA, but also looking at what are ways that employers can be inclusive when it comes to their policies and practices. And so we thought Jen would be the perfect person to have on this episode, as she has a very storied history kind of within employment here at SARA. So Jen, are you ready to jump right in?
I will jump right in. So I started at SARA about 15 years ago as the employment manager. So I have quite a history with the agency, which I'm very proud of. But seeing that it is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, I think that a lot of businesses out of the gate can also help and support this cause too. So along with what we do, which is reviewing our company policies regularly, holding discussions like we are today, and just really having the conversation. And then you could even go as far as having that press release, which we'll probably discuss a little bit later. But for employment, we have about 130 individuals that we support in SARA Employment Services. And we have three different services we focus on. So the first one is transitional. That's a group model. And the goal of this program is to prepare individuals for employment, hopefully in the community someday. So we help them foster independence. We introduce them to work opportunities in the community. And this is all in within the program of having a job coach assist them with this. So once they get that foundation down, then it's time for the next step. This is a progressive program with, again, the goal being eventual employment. So then we would go to an individualized model. It's working with that individual, with their employment specialist, and helping them identify what are their passions. If they had a dream job, what would it be? Again, this is something that SARA is really excelling at, especially recently with the pandemic. Once that person has able to establish, you know, my dream job would be this, or it would be working in this industry, now it's our job as the agency to get them to that point. So once they've finally accomplished that, then they go to our most competitive model, which is individualized supported employment. And that's when the person is supported by the business in the community. They are their employee, and we're simply there for supports to help them be successful.
Yeah. And, you know, thank you, Jim, for providing that kind of overview of, you know, what SARA as an organization does. I think it's important for, you know, the community at large to recognize that while, you know, we're able to kind of talk about this, there hasn't always been a clear and easy path into employment for many individuals with disabilities. Yeah. And some of the challenges that we've certainly seen kind of over the years is, number one, the lack of recognition that an individual with a disability is capable of working. You know, and I think that really is a large roadblock to the success that that individual may have. And so we certainly recognize here at SARA that it's really important to highlight that the skills that an individual has in order for them to be able to say, you know what, I'm just as capable as the next individual. And while maybe there's a modification that needs to be made, they can certainly contribute just like anyone else.
George, that's a great point. I'd actually like to share a little bit about that. One of the biggest obstacles that we've had to overcome is having the businesses see our individuals as an asset to that business, not just doing this for charity. And unfortunately, that is a reality that some of our individuals face. And I do have a brief story. We had one individual that was working at her employer in Guilford. One of the employees there within earshot of this employee said, "Oh, you know, it's been such a long week. I cannot wait to go home and crack a beer." And the supported worker gasped. And the employee said to her, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I offended you." And she put her fist down on the table. She goes, "Beer, vodka." And everybody broke into laughter. And it's just a really good example of how our individuals are just like everybody else. I mean, we all want to go home after a long week and relax.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, when you hear stories like that, it really does, you know, help you relate to what's going on. I remember, you know, kind of the earlier days of when I was involved in the employment department and kind of working with families and helping them recognize what are some of the challenges that we're certainly going to see as we start this journey. You know, and I like to kind of really help parents recognize that. Think back to when you were 15, 16, and 17, you know, going out into the workforce for your first time and thinking about how many jobs did you have between your first job and where you are now, right? Maybe that's 5, 6, 10. The experience that many of the individuals we're supporting is no different, right? The expectation that we're gonna go out and find our dream job immediately isn't gonna happen, you know? And so being really realistic about what's going to happen when we start going down that path of employment, I think it's really important for families to hear, but also recognize, like, how do we normalize these experiences, right? Just because your first job you have isn't successful doesn't mean the second one you have isn't going to be.
I'm gonna just jump in because some of what you're saying really resonates with me. And I think it goes back to this conversation needs to start early, you know, in schools. It's about disability awareness. So, you know, Jen, the story you just said, it just seemed like that person just may not have had experience or just an awareness of they're like everybody else, like we're saying. So it goes back to what are we teaching the community in general? This group of individuals are amazing and the things they can do are amazing. And I don't want to bash. I'm not going to say where I live, but there's a local grocery store that is awesome. They have a lot of people employed there. It is a little disconcerting to me that every time I go in there, they're bagging. All they're doing is bagging. They're capable of a lot more than bagging or just collecting the carts. And I feel almost like what you said, Jen, earlier is like, it's a charity, like, but we're doing this, but are you really giving them opportunities?
I guess the silver lining in that story is that the businesses do realize once they hire and bring on individuals with disabilities, how much of an asset they are mm-hmm. to their business, how they have impeccable work ethic, mm-hmm. and they truly have a phenomenal contribution to their business. And it's nice to hear that feedback because I got to tell you, it really does come around and the business will be very upfront and say, you know, I had hesitations at first, but this program is outstanding. Mm-hmm. This individual is incredible. Their job performance is fantastic. So the feedback is fantastic to hear once they take that leap and they recognize this untapped workforce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a really important piece to recognize that one of the things that we've heard, I'd say over the last couple of years is, you know, there's so many open jobs. People are struggling to get these jobs filled. Yet they're not necessarily recognizing, you know, the disability community as a whole, right? Whether that be an intellectual disability, a developmental disability, or another disability, right? There's an entire workforce part of the population that they're not tapping into. Organizations such as Sarah have that opportunity to say, hey, we actually have this group of people who are looking for the employment. You know, they're ready to work, they're trying to work, and, you know, allowing us to kind of bridge that gap for them is really important because we're not going to make headway if we're not putting ourselves out there and saying, you know what, yes, there are these traditional jobs that many individuals have had, whether that be in a grocery store or, you know, working in smaller businesses, but the scope of what people can do certainly is much larger than what we're seeing on the surface, whether that, you know, I've worked with some people who've worked at Pfizer, but also received support from an organization. And so really not kind of putting people in these traditional views of how you see them because they have a disability and recognizing, let's see what your full scope of capabilities are. I think that's got to be part of the conversation as we move forward.
I agree. And we've also started implementing things at the agency that have helped do that. Bringing in the career plans has been critical. Establish a career plan. Let's face it. Who at 18 knew what they wanted to do with the rest of their life? Who at 21 right. knew what they wanted to do with, you know?
I'm 55 and I'm still not sure what I want to do with the rest of my life. So,
So the career plans are very instrumental in helping individuals at least take that first step in an industry that they really might enjoy. But I do want to circle back because George and Tishu brought something up that was very important. And that is at the school level, having individuals and having those conversations with teams to prepare them for after graduation. A lot mm-hmm. of times when somebody is coming from the school, you know, the umbrella of the school system, which is understandable because that's all they've ever really known when mm-hmm. they come to us, they're thinking that they're going to get a job that's Monday through Friday and it's going to be the same time frame that they were in the school.
Right.
So it becomes a shock to them and their families as well when they're getting offered positions that might be nights and weekends. So that's one of the obstacles that we've faced and that we've really tried to work with teams on is you might have to start with a schedule that you're not in love with, but if you put in that hard work, then you can progress to that schedule that is ideal for you. So these are just one of the many challenges that we face with the teams as we speak and that we try and prepare the individuals for when they're looking for that job.
So Jen, that's a good segue into what else I would love for you to discuss is, and I think families, this could be another obstacle for families, and it may prevent them from wanting their family, their loved one to get, you know, start a career, get a job, is the wages. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So at Sarah Inc., the individuals that are working are paid at least minimum wage. And fortunately, minimum wage has gone up. Ironically, the biggest stumbling block, an area that kind of trip up the individual and their family, is the level of independence that that person begins to gain and not so much the paycheck. So when we think somebody's gonna get their first job, it can be a very big shock to the family that they're suddenly getting a level of independence that they've never seen. And for the family, it can be uncomfortable because they're used to a very routine day or school day, and they're used to a schedule that doesn't change. The wages, fortunately, have gone up in the past. What I think you might be referring to is there was a sub-minimum wage where individuals mm-hmm. got paid less than minimum wage. I'm proud to say that we as an agency got rid of that about 5 years ago. It just didn't support our mission. It wasn't the direction that SARA Employment Services was going on. And we truly believe that everybody should be able to make at least a minimum wage. Mm-hmm. That model has served us very well. And of course, the individuals that are being hired deserve that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and Jen, I just want to circle back to the school, because I think for a lot of listeners out there, you know, whether they're parents or they're guardians of individuals who are kind of going to be going down this path, what kind of recommendations can we make to the parents on how do you have these conversations, right? What's the ideal time to kind of start having these conversations, whether it be at a team level or family level? You know, what are some recommendations you would give them?
That's a great point, George. My recommendation is that when the individual starts high school, that the conversations start being held at the team level, maybe their annual meeting with the schools. And then once they are provided a case manager, if they're state funded, as soon as that case manager is in the picture, that individual can help steer the direction of those team meetings as well. And honestly, it's really never too soon to talk about what is going to happen beyond school, how you can prepare that individual, and how everybody being on board and supporting that individual finding and securing employment is critical. The conversations have to start earlier. So I'd say definitely at the team level in high school. And then if case manager or us as an agency, if we're going to transition meetings, we definitely introduce that conversation and that topic into the team meetings. And it's interesting because it's not always warmly received.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's part of the challenge, right? When we think about what are some of the challenges that individuals will face, it's having those conversations early and often to ease people into that. Because at some point when you turn 22 in Connecticut, you're going to transition out of that school environment. And, you know, to a point that you mentioned earlier, schools are a different environment than when you get into the adult world. And so those transition programs are going to look different. And so something that you may have been doing in the school environment where they said, you know, here are some work-related tasks that you're doing, don't always translate into what employers are looking for. And that's such a big part of the conversation, right? And so in that push to make sure that individuals are fairly compensated for the work that they're doing and making minimum wage, there also has to be that recognition of we need to make sure that we're preparing individuals for what that employer is going to look for when they get to that particular job. And I think that's where you have programs such as ours, when the transitional program comes into play of what is that employer looking for? What are those real life opportunities that you have in the community to say, here are the work skills that I'm practicing. Is this something I'm looking for? Is this something I enjoy doing? Because the more exploration and opportunity to kind of try your hand at different things gives you a greater scope of ultimately, am I going to be good at that? Do I like working indoors? Do I like working outdoors? I know personally, I'm not an outdoor person. I learned that early. You know, I think many of our individuals want to deserve those same opportunities.
Very good point. For the transition program, I think you hit the nail on the head, George. A lot of times I get approached by the schools or the families, and they're very honest with me. And they say, well, you know, my son or daughter is excellent at folding laundry. Can we get them a job working in a laundromat? And then we would not be doing that team any good if we weren't honest about it's a little bit more than folding laundry. This is what you need to look at. Because if we're touting that an individual with a disability should be treated like any other employee, then we can't expect them to be treated differently at a job site. So you can't just fold laundry. There's so much more that comes with that. It's interacting with the public. It might require running a cash register. So for us, it's really educating those teams, having them look at the big picture. And sometimes it does lead to really uncomfortable conversations. But in the end, we're helping that family, we're helping that individual, and we're better preparing them for upon graduation when they're 22. They're going to be more ready to come into a program like ours, transitional, where we're going to help them gain that independence and hopefully get that job.
Yeah, and I think that translates a little bit from what we've seen with some of the more outdated models, right? Of my son or daughter has this particular skill that they've worked on, and I want them to be able to just do that. And I do think, you know, again, some of the organizations that have either the 14C minimum wage waiver or have been in those traditional smaller businesses that can support that, I think that certainly is a model that works. But I think we're also kind of seeing that shift away from that. Again, recognizing the increase in the minimum wage is certainly a component of it, but also looking at if that is a path that someone wants to go down, that's really what we talk about with individualized support. What are those skills that you have? Can we find that opportunity for you in the community? So I'm curious, Jim, kind of from your experience, you know, where do you see kind of the direction of employment services going for those who do have an intellectual or developmental disability?
Just from what I've seen, especially in the last couple of years, a lot of individuals are coming into our transitional program. They're getting that foundation in employment that really represents what to expect from a community employer. And then they are progressing to individualized employment and getting that first job. So I think over the months and years, we're going to see more individuals transitioning out of a transitional program and securing their first job, getting their first paycheck, because they're better prepared to work for that business in the community. I can tell you one of the best success stories we've had, we had an individual at a local business in Old Saybrook, I'll gladly tout them, West Marine. We had a transitional crew there, and West Marine recognized one of the individuals on that crew, had a conversation with the job coach, one thing led to another. That individual is now employed at West Marine independently.
That's awesome.
When it works very well.
Mm-hmm. You know, and what about those individuals who certainly recognize they need that support, but they're kind of on the cusp, right? We certainly have some individuals who are very much getting supports and getting services, but I think there's also a large group of individuals who are kind of right on the edge of, do I need the supports, or, you know, better yet, do I qualify for the supports? What are some of the steps that those individuals can take to kind of also be successful?
Once they're in the transitional program, we're taking quite a bit of data. We're trying to identify what their strengths and weaknesses are. And when that individual is ready to graduate from the transitional program, they have the option to go into individualized vocational. And what this program does is they work one-on-one with their employment specialist for a set amount of hours per week, anywhere from 9 to 14 hours a week. This particular waiver service is outstanding for that person who isn't quite sure if they're ready to work competitively in the community yet, who may have just successfully gone through the transitional program, but needs a little bit of a push or maybe a little bit more work with that one-on-one time with their employment specialist. So during those hours, they can, again, develop that career plan. They can work on doing mock interviews together, which is critical because a lot of the individuals that we have that have disabilities, they have the ability physically, but social skills tend to be a challenge for them. So the employment specialists will do mock interviews. They'll practice answering those tough questions that none of us like during an interview. They will look for online applications to fill out and kind of get that individual used to that. So anything that will help them or prepare them for employment, their staff will work with them on. And then at the end of the, you know, an agreed upon time, they can decide, okay, are we ready to look for that job? Or do you want to continue these supports and see if we can grow a little bit more, advocate for ourselves a little bit more before we go to work and get that first paycheck? So I think, George, that's a really good question because it's not a one size fits all. We know that. Some individuals are ready right out of the gate from graduating from the transitional program to get that first job. Other individuals need a little bit more help and time from their employment specialist.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing of recognizing kind of where do I, as the person who's looking for that job, kind of fall within that range of supports. Also recognizing that, you know, there are many people that we encounter who are looking for those supports that may not have that state funding. And I think that's where we play a very pivotal role of certainly helping them still and saying, you know, let's figure out what resources are there for you in the community. Now, I think often people think, well, either I have state funding or I don't, and I can't get supports if I don't have state funding, which isn't true. You know, we support, you know, here at Sarah, a lot of individuals who don't have, whether it be Department of Developmental Services funding or Bureau of Rehab Services funding, we can still be a resource to them. And I think that's where a lot of our advocacy and education really comes into play there. Jen, I want to go back because you've brought this up a couple times, but I don't know if people truly understand kind of what it means. Can you talk a little bit more about that career plan?
Yes. So a career plan is, I want to say, a 20-page document that we work on with that individual. It's very comprehensive. It's very in-depth. And it helps to establish what that individual might like to do, what industry they might like to go in, or maybe they want to go back to school. It really opens up a lot of different avenues for them. And it gives us a roadmap to provide supports. So we, again, want this to be individualized. That career plan helps us identify a good place to start, good industry to start. And it also helps us build up that individual because they might be struggling in certain areas. And doing the career plan shows us where we have to work with them more so they can ultimately be successful. We've had a lot of individuals do these career plans, and they have definitely helped them secure employment and help their staff work with them in a more defined way.
So yeah. It's almost like we have an IEP, you know, or IFSP, if someone starts in birth of three, then an IEP, and then you can go to an individualized career plan.
It's similar. I think because this particular, the career plan that we use is, it just really drills down. So it's part of the process, similar to what you were just discussing, Tisha. It's part of the process. And it's another tool that we use to ultimately make sure that they're going to be successful.
I love that idea. I think families love that idea because it just helps them be part of the process and to help their loved one really achieve their goals.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, one of the things that we haven't mentioned, but is certainly very much part of the process, is volunteer work. Often when kids are transitioning from the school environment and now they're becoming young adults, volunteering is a great way to really explore and kind of put to practice some of those skills that you're gonna need in the real world. You know, can I show up on time? Am I getting up and am I ready for my job? Am I carrying out the tasks that are assigned to me the way that they've been requested? You know, these opportunities don't have to be either employment or nothing. I think volunteering is kind of a great middle ground for people to really explore further and, you know, give back in a way that's meaningful to them as well.
Definitely. When talking to the families, I think a lot of times they don't realize the amount of pressure that individual can experience when they're, say, with transitional, if they're at a community partner and they're doing some vocational tasks. There is an expectation there that work or that job or task is going to be done in a certain amount of time, and it's going to be done to the standards of that employer. It's a type of pressure that they're typically not used to upon graduation that we're introducing them to, but it's just as important as everything else we're covering in the program, because that's going to be the expectation of somebody that hires them down the road.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So, you know, Jim, before we close out today, you know, if you were to think of kind of the top things that you want our listeners to take away, you know, as they start to explore this path, or if they're currently employed or looking to do something different, kind of what would you share with them?
Patience. It is definitely a process. Be open to what is recommended by the team, whether it be the Sarah team or the school team. The individuals that are working with them have their best interests at heart. We want to see them succeed and to be open to trying new opportunities. Maybe you're going to try something that scared you in the past or is unfamiliar to you, but we're going to help that individual. We're going to help them grow, and we're here for whatever path they decide to take. Again, I'm going to keep going back to it's an individualized model, even though we support a number of individuals. We really focus on what is it going to take for that person to be successful. And we work with them in doing that.
I think that's a really great message. So thank you very much, Jen.
Jen, thank you so much for your time. This was great information for our listeners.
Thank you, Tisha.
As always, you can find our podcast on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the Sarah Inc. website.
On any Amazon or Alexa-enabled devices, you can ask Alexa to play 99% Effective, Sarah Solutions podcast. And let us know, what do you want to learn more about? If you have an idea or topic, let us know. We would love to hear from you.